Rav Yochanan, the famous Amora, his name was Rav Yochanan ben Nafcha, which literally means the son of the blacksmith, and it just reflects the fact that we don't know much about his family. We don't know much about him when he was young. His father died when his mother was pregnant, and his mother died at childbirth. That's what the Gemara Kedushin says. The Gemara Kedushin actually has a funny comment, which is like, wow, he should be praised because he never has to do the mitzvah. He'll never fall short of doing the, you know, he'll never do a poor job in the mitzvah of Kivud Avim because he's got no mitzvah at all to do. It's a bit of a funny Gemara. In any event, he has a sister, presumably an older sister, and his sister married Reish Lakish. That's a very well-known story. Reish Lakish was a gladiator, and when Rav Yochanan saw him swimming in the water, he saw his muscular tones and how strong he was. He told Reish Lakish he should use his strength for Torah opposed to using it for swimming and for being a warrior. And Reish Lakish says, Rav Yochanan, you're such a tremendously good-looking man. Rav Yochanan was known to be unbelievably attractive. The Gemara has actually some of the descriptions about him, which I find not so attractive. In the modern world, might not. They say he was very, very fat, and he had very, very long eyelashes, Rav Yochanan. But nonetheless, I don't know, things I guess were different those days or why, I'm not sure. Rav Yochanan was known to be very, very good looking. On a man?
Yeah,
not particularly. So, okay, so there you have it. You guys learned something new and I learned something new. So Reish Lakish responded that Rav Yochanan should use his good looks for women opposed to for nothing. And the two struck a deal. Rav Yochanan said to Reish Lakish, I have a sister who's as good looking as I am. And if you're interested in women, you can marry her as long as you become a Talmid Chacham and learn Torah, and you'll use your strength for Torah, and you'll get the good looks that you're looking for. And they made a deal, and he married Rabbi Yochanan's sister, and he entered the world of learning, and he became a Talmid Chacham. That's what this is the story the Gemara tells in Sefer Bava Metzia, and that's a Dalit. Reish Lakish would challenge everything Rabbi Yochanan would say. He would argue, and he would question, and he would attack. Often he would be satisfied with the answers, and often he would disagree. And it's very well known that Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, they disagree about a lot of things. The classic Baal Plokta, the classic Rav Yochanan always argues with, is Reish Lakish. After Reish Lakish died, Rav Elazar would come sit before Rav Yochanan, and he would, after Rav Yochanan would say something, Rav Elazar would say, look, I have a proof from here, and that makes sense because of this, and here's his support, and here's a raya. And Rav Yochanan responded, I know that I'm right. Reish Lakish would ask me 24 kashas, forcing me to offer 24 answers. And this would lead to a clarification of the din. Rav Yochanan didn't want support. He wanted to be challenged. And by the way, parenthetically, you see Rav Yochanan's tremendous love and desire, his passion for truth, that he'd rather have someone attack him and argue than support him and, you know, flatter him. In terms of his physical appearance, he was known to be very fat. The Gemara Bracha says the halacha is that one should not say Kriyat Shema lying face straight up, lying on your back, face straight up. He should turn a little bit of a chutzpah. The Gemara says, "Hi, Rav Yochanan did that." The Gemara says, "Yes, shiny Rav Yochanan, the Baal HaBasar Habe. He had a lot of basar on him. He was a heavy set man." The Gemara Brachos and the Metziah talk about how he'd sit in the entrance to the mikvah. As women went to the mikvah, they'd pray for the children to be as beautiful as Rav Yochanan. A little bit of an unusual practice. We don't do that these days anymore. In terms of his contribution in learning, it's tradition has it that he put together the Yerushalmi, the Gita Talmud Yerushalmi. Rabbi Steinsaltz, you know Rabbi Steinsaltz, he has a book where he goes through a lot of the, I think it's called Talmudic Personalities. There he claims that Rabbi Yochanan helped the style of learning that became the Gemara, meaning until him, most of the Amoraim quoted, collected brisas, collected Mishnayos, put together finishing touches on Mishnayos. He's really one of the first ones to question and to answer and to challenge and to analyze. He, along with Reish Lakish, and he's the one who really first began the Talmud as the Talmud learning is the way we have it today. Steinsaltz further shows the differences between the two styles. Rav Yirmiya in Bava Basra was thrown out of the Beit Medrash for asking a famous question, which was, what's the din for a person who has 1 foot within 50 amos of this chatzer and 50 amos of that chatzer? They threw him out of the Beit Medrash and said, who cares about theoretical questions that have no practical application? Steinsaltz pointed out that in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, that was the common way of learning. It was much less question-answer, much less rigorous in its conceptual demand, and much more straightforward in just offering information. If you look at the Yerushalmi, doesn't drive you in circles like the Bavli. The Bavli, you can get dizzy from. He asks the Kashan, gives a teretz, he asks the Kashan a teretz, he gives a teretz to that. It asks the Kashan, gives three more teretz, when you don't know if the third one's the third teretz, the previous Kasha, the one before it. The Yerushalmi is pretty straightforward. The Yerushalmi just offers dinim. Steinzeltz points out that in Bavel, Rav Yirmiyah's question would have been answered. The Bavli is much more questions and answers in its orientation, and Rav Yochanan really was one of the founding fathers of that style of learning. Rav Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael toward the beginning of the Amoraic period, after the Tanaim of the Amoraim. He even sat in Rebbe's Beis Medrash, but he was very young when he sat there. Some of the other Amoraim, like Rav is actually, but Rav Tana Upalik, even though Rav's an Amora, he can serve as a Tana and he can argue, because he's a Talmud of Rav Yehuda Nasi, of Rebbe. Rav Yehuda Nasi is really known to be the last of the Tanaim. Rav Yochanan also sat in the Beis Medrash of Rebbe. He also sat in Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rav Yehuda Nasi rather's Beis Medrash. Although he was very young, he wasn't really seen as a Talmud of Rebbe, certainly not the same way Rav was. Rav Yochanan was married to Sotam. Rav Yochanan he's probably quoted a lot in the Bavli, but says Steinzeltz more in the Yerushalmi than the Bavli, and just in terms of where he lived, that's where it was, and his influence. He humbled the Amoraim in Bavel when they met him. Rav Zera fasted 100 fasts in order to forget what he had learned in Bavel. He was so impressed with Rav Yochanan, he didn't want to mix it up, he didn't want to confuse it with the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. He was so impressed with Rav Yochanan's Torah. Rav Yochanan is well accepted as a posek, very, very well accepted as a Mora Halacha, certainly over Reish Lakish. Whenever there's a Machlokas, Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish, almost without exception, we follow Rav Yochanan. We were passing, like, he's the one who says, we passed him like a Stam, a mission, if there's a mission that no one attacks. Rav Yochanan was the one who really started passing like that, and that caught on. We follow Rav Yochanan all the way through like that. He was one of the primary figures who gave Mishnayos more weight, more credibility, more weight than Brises. In other words, who says what's more important, a Mishnah or a Brises? We all see, assume it's a Mishnah. Rav Yochanan was one of the first ones to do that. He was known to be a tremendous worker with a lot of diligence and real work ethic. He was known to point out what fields in his land was his. He used to point this, I used to have a field here, I used to have a field here, I used to have a field in the third place. He sold them all so he could learn. That's what Vayikra Rava says. I think it's Vayikra Rava Lamed Medrash Aleph. He was not involved in politics. He was really just sitting learning. Many suspect it stems from the famous incident that took place in the, with the story between him and Ilfa. Ilfa was another of the Amoraim. The story is recorded in Zechus Tainus. The two were sitting near a wall, and together they decided to leave learning and engage in commerce. This way they could fulfill the pasuk, promising that Jews won't be poor. The pasuk in Dvar, if anyone's interested, the pasuk promised that Jews won't be poor. So they figured if they can help bring that pasuk to fruition, it'd be a great thing. When hearing this, one of the angels suggested to another that they push the walls on top of the two Amoraim. And the second Amora responded that one of these two men was destined for greatness, and therefore the angel should not kill Rav Yochanan and Ilfa. In other words, even though they disagreed, they disapproved of what Rav Yochanan and Ilfa were going to do, leave the world of learning and get a career, nonetheless they decided not to kill him. Rav Yochanan assumed, because he was the only one who heard this, and not Ilfa, that he was designed for greatness, and this may have triggered him to really work unbelievably hard and would grow into greatness and learning. Again, in terms of his personal life, we know very little about his parents, about his family, we pointed out earlier on. However, we do know about his sons, and it's a tragic lifestyle. He had a tragic life. Rav Yochanan had 10 sons, of all of which who died at a young age in his lifetime. And it really bothered Rav Yochanan to no end. He used to carry around the bone of his baby finger around his neck as a necklace to remind him of his 10 children. That's a little bit, certainly not well accepted these days, but it's a very strong reaction. Rav Yochanan was very much impacted by it. So much so, I went to the Pshat and the Reuven Tag, the Rebbe in Hakotel. These suggestions I like very much. I thought it was very sharp. If you look in the Gemara Bava Basha, the Gemara Bava Basha is talking about the authorship of all the different Sfarim, who wrote what, and when it was written, and who was who, and whatnot. And the Gemara suggests, the Gemara discusses Eov. When was Eov written? And one person says Eov lived in the time of Abraham. One person says Eov lived in the time of Moshe, Yaakov, all sorts of different suggestions. One person actually suggests Eov never lived. Lohaya didn't exist at all. The whole story is just a metaphor. The whole story is just a mashal. The Gemara rejects that. Ironically enough, the Rambam actually accepts what the Gemara rejects, at that opinion. And then the Gemara actually quotes Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says that... remember it exactly. Rav Yochanan says that Eov lived after Bayis Sheni in some city in Eretz Yisrael. Something like that, with exact details. And what's shocking is that it's very difficult to imagine Eov lived after Bayis Sheni, but Tanakh was canonized, was closed before Bayis Sheni. How could you tell me the story took place in the future? The whole thing in Nevuah? So maybe you could argue yes. But I heard from Reuven Tarigan, Rav Yochanan had a different agenda. Rav Yochanan's point was, I am Eov. I'm living in post Bayis Sheni. I'm the one who, living in the city in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yochanan had 10 sons who all died and carried around the baby's finger on a bone. That's a man who really feels something wrong happened to him. Something unjust happened to him. Tzadik HaRal, so to speak. Rav Yochanan may have been saying, this Gemara Bava Basha, you know who Eov is? Any man who suffers in an unknown way. Any man who feels Hashem's wrath and doesn't understand why. There is no reason why. That may be what Eov is saying over here. That's what Rav Yochanan was saying over here. This chat is correct. You really see it's not just difficult life, but a self-awareness, some of the self-pity that Rav Yochanan had.